Pro-Life to the Max is produced and broadcast by WOMB 89.9 FM Catholic Radio in Bloomington, Indiana.
Ave Maria, welcome to Pro-Life to the Max, a weekly half-hour radio program under the patronage of St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe that is dedicated to keeping you informed on local, state, and national pro-life issues and efforts and inspiring you to get involved. I'm Rhonda Branham, joined with my co-host Monica Seifker. Thanks for joining us today. Well, we've got an informative show lined up for you with guest Debbie Vintage, Executive Director for the pro-life organization Children of God for Life. We'll be talking with Debbie about her organization's leading role in the campaign for ethical vaccines. And in case that's got you wondering what vaccines have to do with abortion, you're about to find out. I'm sure we're all going to learn a lot today, and hopefully this information will propel us into greater prayer and action in helping to end abortion. So let's get started off in prayer.
O Mary, Mother of the Unborn, protect the gift of human life which your divine Son has allowed to be given. Give strength and joy to all parents as they await the birth of the precious child they have conceived. Give courage to those who are fearful, calm those who are anxious, and guide all of us with your motherly care to treasure and protect the miraculous gift of human life. We ask this through your Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen.
And let's go now to this week's In the News.
This past Thursday, on the National Day of Prayer, President Trump issued new rules that would further protect medical professionals who do not wish to be forced to perform abortions or make referrals for them. According to Life News, Trump announced new regulations through the Department of Health and Human Services that will more effectively enforce existing federal laws that protect the conscience rights of healthcare providers. The administration felt the need to clarify what recourse is available to victims of discrimination in order to help curb the rising number of medical professionals who are feeling the pressure to violate their conscience. This rule ensures that healthcare entities and professionals won't be bullied out of the healthcare field because they decline to participate in actions that violate their conscience, including the taking of human life, read a statement from Roger Severino, director for the Office of Civil Rights. Protecting conscience and religious freedom not only fosters greater diversity in healthcare, it's the law, Severino said. Various pro-life and Catholic organizations have praised the new rules. And according to the most recent abortion data available from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the number of babies aborted in New York City at or after 21 weeks of pregnancy outnumbered homicide victims 4-1 in 2015. A report at CNSnews.com observed that 1,485 babies had been killed at the gestational age of 21 weeks or older in the Big Apple, while the number of homicide victims was 352. CNS News noted that the New York Times has recently run stories stating that abortions occurring after 21 weeks are very rare. Pro-life organizations continue to keep their eyes fixed on the Empire State, where this past January, Democrat Governor Andrew Cuomo signed into law New York's Reproductive Health Act, which removed virtually all restrictions on abortion up until the day of birth. A Louisville woman has pleaded not guilty to second-degree assault charges against an elderly pro-life sidewalk counselor outside of the only remaining abortion facility in Kentucky. Janaea Gregory, 31, appeared in court this past Wednesday after allegedly pushing Donna Durning to the ground, breaking her leg and cutting her head. According to the criminal complaint, Gregory initially ignored Durning, but then turned back around and charged at the victim. Witnesses took down the car's license plate number, and police found that Gregory is the registered owner. Numerous other incidents of violence against pro-lifers have been documented throughout the country since the beginning of the year. And finally, an estimated 19 unborn children were killed this past Thursday at the Bloomington Planned Parenthood. Women from various Hoosier counties came to 421 South College Avenue to procure an abortion as sidewalk and prayer advocates were on hand to offer help, hope, and love as the women came in. And that's your weekly In the News.
Luke chapter 6, verse 45 tells us that a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth that which is evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so, Monica, we know that abortion, which is the murder of the unborn, is such an horrific evil on its own. But what a lot of people, and especially Catholics, are not aware of is that the evil of abortion has brought forth even more darkness, centered around aborted fetal research and the production of vaccines and consumer products that make use of the tissues and cell lines of aborted babies.
That's right, Rhonda. A huge billion-dollar market exists in the research and in the creation and sale of cell lines from aborted fetal material. And these cell lines have found their way into some common vaccines and other products. Not only that, there's a history of forced abortions that are involved in this type of research. Many in the medical profession and even in the church are unaware of these horrendous practices. But Debbie Vintage and her organization, Children of God for Life, are doing all they can to change that. We are blessed to have Debbie join us today here on Pro-Life to the Max, so let's bring her on now. Hi, Debbie.
Oh, hi. Thanks so much for having me on your program.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us. Now, I know our listeners are going to hear some things they've probably never heard before, and so it's important that we get this information out. And right off the bat, I want to encourage everyone to go to the Children of God for Life website at cogforlife.org. That's cogforlife.org. The site is packed full of information and documentation on the research and use of aborted fetal cell lines in vaccines, medicines, cosmetics, and other products.
So, Debbie, would you first give us the skinny on how, for the past 30 years or so, the pharmaceutical industry has been using cell lines that have been derived from aborted babies in the production of some vaccines and other medical products? And what does this even mean? And what is a cell line?
Wow, that's a very loaded question. So we'll take it little by little. But to begin with, actually, and this may shock you and your listeners to understand, many people think that this has been only going on for about 30 years. In fact, the vaccine research began in the early 1900s. When I say research, I mean research using aborted babies. And it's just a horrific thing that started back at the time of what was going on in the United States, the eugenics movement. Now, I can tell you, I'm going to give you a little background on this because Children of God for Life was formed 20 years ago. And when I first started my work, I was just like everyone else out there thinking these were abortions that were done in the, you know, about 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's all. I didn't know the history until about 8 years ago. And that came actually, and just by a freak, a bit of information that was sent to me from someone in a pro-life group in Spain. And they wanted to know what was going on here in the United States when there were these documents, science documents out there about the forced abortion of these babies that were being done for polio research. And I was shocked because, of course, abortion wasn't legal in the United mm-hmm. States. And so that took me into a lot of research where I found what had begun to happen. There was forced sterilizations going on in the United States.
Yeah, in particular, Indiana. I think they were one
yes.
of the first states to do so.
Yeah, there were several states that got, there was, I forget the number now. I want to say that there was like 22 states that got involved with it. So, and it was really something that was started by a man by the name of Harry Lachlan. He was, he actually had an appointment called the director of the Master Race Project. And his goal was to sterilize people that they deemed unfit, that they were unfit to breed, whether they were the mentally impaired people, the homeless people, people that had maybe some type of a mental problem, you know, of some type of mental disease, and unwed mothers. Because yeah. at the time, if you were an unwed mother and you were, you know, you were pregnant, an unwed woman, there was something wrong with you.
Yeah.
You know, you had to have something mentally wrong with you. It just wasn't heard of. And so he began this push for the sterilization and weeding out of the imperfect people. And it would continue right on through. There were laws in the books, actually, that I found right on through the 1950s and early 1960s. They still had these laws on the book.
Wow.
On the books. But anyway, so what they were doing at the time, these women that they found that were pregnant, and they would do what's called they were sterilizing them and doing the abortion at the same time. And the type of abortion that was done, it was a real telltale as to what they were doing and why. It was called an abdominal hysterotomy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never heard of that before either. I know I've heard of C-sections. I've heard of all different types of ways of abortions, but I'd never heard of this. And they said that, so I looked it up in the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and they said that it wasn't a routine method of terminating an early pregnancy at all. It was usually done in late term.
Late term, wow.
Okay, mm-hmm. And it was only done when sterilization was required in addition to terminating pregnancy. And then they even said in the case of mental disease. So it was pretty, you know, the information was really very damning and revealing. And so from Harry Loughlin, of course, I know your listeners here all know Margaret Sanger.
Yes, yes.
And she, of course, was very much a big proponent of the eugenics movement. Foster Kennedy was another one. He believed in killing imperfect babies up to 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
Because he said he thought that we should relieve the defective of the agony of having to live. I mean, it was so horrible. Probably one of the most horrific things that I discovered when I was doing this is looking at the actual journals. And the scientist, Albert Sabin, we all know who Albert Sabin and Salk and Sabin, we might remember them anyway from years ago in school. We learned about people that were so great that had all these, that, you know, responsible for polio vaccine. And he actually wrote in 1936 about how they were using these 3 to 4 month old human, and they called them embryos, even though at that point they're obviously not embryos.
Yeah, yeah.
That were being obtained using abdominal hysterotomy and all the different organs that they were taking out and removing and using in their polio research.
Well, so which came first then? I mean, did they just, these abortions, they were doing them, you know, because they thought they were creating this master race, and then they got the bright idea to, hey, let's not waste this tissue and organ? Is that kind of how that came about?
Well, sort of, I guess, because they, you know, the sterilization was the first primary thing, right? So they might be sterilizing women for other reasons, or they may have been, they may be an unwed mother, the baby's already born. So they're going to sterilize her, so no abortion may be involved in that. But at the same time that what happened, there was a polio pandemic that was going on at the same time.
Okay.
In the early 1900s, there were over 27,000 cases just in Boston and New York.
Oh, wow.
In 1 year. And there were, but all over the world, there were millions of cases of polio.
So they're looking for a vaccine. They want a vaccine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So why would they turn to aborted fetal tissue? I mean, what is the benefit of that for those vaccines?
Well, it's not, there's not, but they were, I think that it was something that they thought possibly would have been better to use the human cell line versus an animal cell line, just because you're going to vaccinate for humans. You didn't want to have any, you know, component that might cause any kind of a contamination from the animal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
In reality, the human cell line is far more dangerous than the animal cell line.
Why is that?
Well, this is interesting, but DNA does not cross species. So what I mean by that is if you were to get a vaccine that is, you know, it's made using an animal cell line, and so let's say that there was some traces of the animal DNA in the vaccine, that vaccine could not insert itself into your genome, but human DNA can. So these are actually new science studies that are going on right now by a company called Sound Choice Pharmaceutical. Very brilliant Catholic adult stem cell scientist, Dr. Teresa Deischer, has been working on this. And she's very well aware of how that DNA can insert. And if it does, the FDA acknowledges that it is a problem too. Back in those days, you got to understand, they didn't have the science knowledge, right? They didn't know about DNA. They didn't know about the problems that could be out there. But I think they just felt that it would probably be safer using human tissue than animal.
Okay.
But in their science documents, they also noted that they had used adult cadavers. You know, so they were using other moral sources that weren't just coming from aborted babies. But the focus seemed to be on the aborted babies. And because they were getting those babies fresh tissue, there was a pretty good supply going on. In one of the documents, I can tell you, this really absolutely broke my heart when I was reading it, was from Dr. Enders and Weller and Robbins in the Journal of Immunology. And they wrote that they had, again, embryos of 12 to 18 weeks that were obtained by abdominal hysterotomy. And in many cases, the hearts were still beating at the time of receipt in the polio research lab.
Wow. That's something. So Debbie, so what are they after? What is a cell line? What are they doing when they get this tissue and organs? What are they doing?
Okay, so what happens is they have a piece of tissue, an organ, and in all of the scientists that throughout this history of using aborted fetal cells have also done the same thing. They've used various organs and then they try to culture tissue cells from those tissues. Let's say lung tissue is one of the most popular ones. So they've used kidney, they've used retinal tissue, they've used various ones. And what they do is they will try to cultivate what's called a cell line. A cell line is nothing more like, if you might think back to the days of your biology class in ninth grade, I remember this, where we would take our skin cells and scrape them off and mm-hmm. look at them under the mm-hmm. microscope. Mm-hmm. Did you ever do that in
mm-hmm.
biology?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you could see them moving and going, oh, that's neat. Okay,
yeah.
So
yeah.
what they would do is do the same thing, basically, but on a much larger scale. They're going to take those cells and they're going to cultivate them on a medium. And as that cell line grows, now they have this robust cell culture going on, okay? And what they will do is introduce the virus to that culture. And now it's going to grow. That virus is going to multiply on the cell line. So basically, the cell line acts like a breeding ground okay. for the virus. Mm-hmm. And it helps. That's what scientists do when they're going to produce a batch of vaccines. They will grow the virus on that cell line. They take the cell line actually as out of deep freeze. Once they've established the cell line, I should back up. Once they've established it, they know it's viable and it's working well. They'll freeze it, and then when they want to use it, they'll take it out and let it cultivate again, use part of it for vaccine, for a batch of vaccines, and they refreeze, you know, what they don't use, and they keep this going.
Wow. Okay. That's very informative.
Yeah, and so this can be done on adult stem cells. Okay.
Wow.
Huh. Wow. So can you give us a quick run through of the current United States vaccines that use these aborted babies' fetal cell lines, and do alternatives exist?
Well, I'll tell you first, start with the simple one, which are the childhood vaccines. That would be MMR, chickenpox, hepatitis A is not normally given to a baby, but it can be given, you know, around 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
In some states they do that, where they happen to have a lot of hepatitis A. Rabies, some polio. I think those are the primary ones.
What about hepatitis B?
And chickenpox. I said chickenpox. Oh, no, hepatitis B is fine. Hepatitis B does not use aborted fetal cells.
Okay.
But what they've done, what the pharmaceutical companies have done, it's like if you look at MMR, it's the measles and the mumps are grown on chicken eggs. There's nothing wrong with it. It's the rubella vaccine mm-hmm. that supports the
yeah.
big problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rubella vaccine uses not only is the virus from an aborted baby, but so is the cell line.
Ugh.
And so that vaccine, when you combine it, now you've got it. Well, you know, if you're going to get MMR, you're getting the aborted fetal material through the rubella portion. But if you were to get those separate doses, measles separate and mumps separate, they're fine. Rubella's not. So there's no moral alternative for MMR in the United States, and there's no moral alternative for hepatitis A in the United States, but there are moral alternatives for both of those in Japan.
Okay.
And Japan has, the Japanese actually have two moral rubella vaccines. Absolutely no reason, when you compare what the Japanese did to what the United States did, no reason to use aborted fetal cells at all.
Yeah,
and this information, too, is on your website, right?
Yeah, so yes, it is. We list, we have a vaccine product list, and it will, this is what I said, it's very extensive. It has not just the vaccines, but there's other medicines, too. People aren't aware. They think this is just children's vaccines. No, it's actually not. There's diseases out there for respiratory infection, for anemia, for cystic fibrosis, hemophilia, Enbrel. Enbrel is one for rheumatoid arthritis. You see that one advertised on TV a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have the good news. Shingles is another one that's an adult vaccine. But we just, last year, we finally got a moral shingles vaccine for the first time ever. GlaxoSmithKline has produced it. And that's a great pro-life victory right there.
Yeah,
that is. Yeah.
Now, some say that the cell lines used in these vaccines are very distant from the original abortions. Is that true? And what does the church teach about the morality of these unethical vaccines?
Well, that's a very loaded question. First of all, on the dissent, that they're very far removed, that's actually not scientifically correct at all. The vaccines, the cell lines that we use today, are no different genetically. They contain the complete DNA that from the original aborted baby. In fact, that DNA is so intact that and I actually had an email directly from the scientist who developed the WI-38 aborted fetal cell line. His name is Leonard Hayflick. And we went to him surreptitiously. I couldn't go to him as a pro-life person and ask him what I wanted to. So we had a friend of mine who could do this. And they wrote to him and said, look, you know, we want to know how intact is that DNA. I mean, you know, could you theoretically, you know, could you do anything with it? Is it really this part of that baby? And he said that the DNA was so pristine and so intact, you could, in theory, clone that baby using, you know, the cloning features, that dead baby with cell line.
That's very telling, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not true, and that is something that has been published a lot of different places that, it's so far removed.
Wow, okay. And can we clear this up so everybody understands then too, so if we get a vaccine, we're inoculated with one of these vaccines that does come from the cell line of an aborted baby, so is this true? The DNA from that baby or some kind of cell component or something, it gets into our system, is that correct?
It can. It's definitely in the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're getting
mm-hmm.
the vaccine, you're getting it.
Okay.
Now, whether or not it incorporates is another thing.
Okay.
Because that's like you have to have like the perfect timing on this, but cells, and especially this is why it's dangerous with babies,
Mm-hmm.
is their brain cells are rapidly mm-hmm. dying and growing and dying and rebuilding, and so that's a normal part of baby's development. If they get a vaccine at that key moment when there might be a breakdown in the cell, that DNA has a greater chance to insert itself.
Yeah, and so,
go ahead.
Health problems then, you think? I mean, is that,
we're
seeing that people, you know, legitimately that have concerns then with these vaccines because of the health problems?
Yeah, what about autism? Is that?
Absolutely.
Is that where?
Okay. The FDA has, I have it in writing from the FDA on this one. FDA said that they if the DNA should insert, it can cause autoimmune disorders, number one. Autism is considered an autoimmune disorder. So it could cause autism spectrum disorder. It could cause autism. It can also cause childhood cancers. There's a whole slew of problems. Now, FDA said, we don't think this will happen, though, because, and get ready for this, we only allow a small amount of DNA to be in those vaccines to begin with from a safety standpoint. There cannot be any more than 10 nanograms of DNA per dose of vaccine, okay? That sounds great until you'd measure how much DNA is really in the vaccines. Number one, just to give you an idea, Dr. Deischer did studies. She ordered the vaccines and then broke it down and to measure the DNA that were in the MMR and hepatitis A vaccines. And instead of being 10 nanograms or, you know, close to it, anywhere from 140 to 250 nanograms per dose.
Wow.
Okay, of DNA. That's number one. But the worst is Merck's chickenpox vaccine, when they submitted it's called a basis for approval, when they were submitting the vaccine for final approval to the FDA, they noted in their own vaccine has 2,000 nanograms of DNA in it.
Wow.
2,000. And the FDA thought, well, it's not going to insert. That couldn't happen.
Wow.
We're seeing a lot of problems. So the fact is it's real. It's not something that somebody, you know, did a study a long time ago. We hear this all the time. Oh, that's not true. That link's been, you know, disproven. No, that was done in the 1990s. This is current.
Yeah, that's what I love about your organization too, is you are staying on top of these things and you're providing the documentation, you know.
That's right. I will never, ever put anything out there unless I can prove it, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Debbie, some of these aborted fetal cells and tissues are also used in the development of food products, medicines, and cosmetics. Can you give us some examples of this?
Well, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I just had a discussion with someone about that who was convinced that they're eating dead babies.
Right.
It is the worst lie that has, it's terrible, that has been put out there. People wanted, you know, took the story of what we were trying to do, which was a legitimate thing. In 2010, we found out that there's a company called Synomics. They produce flavor enhancers for companies, artificial flavorings. You know, no big deal, right? The problem was is that after they have their flavor all completed, they've got this, let's say, French vanilla, okay? And they have that flavor. They want to make sure that it's correct. They were using an aborted fetal cell line called HEK-293. That stands for human embryonic kidney. It's specimen number 293. They were using that to test the flavoring. Why? Well, there's a G protein. It's called a G protein that's in the cell line. And what they were doing is it was like a chemical signal that is sent from the G protein back to the scientist. They get some type of signal and says, yep, we've achieved the flavor we're trying to get. Wow. They're testing the flavor, okay? I read their patents. In fact, I read over 75 of them. I mean, I couldn't believe, but I kept going through and reading every one. I wanted to see if anything was done morally. Mm-hmm. Not a single one of them, not one did they not use the HEK. They used it in every single patent. But in there, they also noted that they could be using animal cells. They said the same effect happened with their animal cell lines that they tested. So we wrote to Sonomics and said, knock it off. You don't have to do this.
Yeah.
You know, there's no reason for you to use aborted fetal cell lines, and this is abhorrent to use the remains of an aborted baby like that. And we told them, if you don't knock it off, we're going to go after your customers.
Uh-huh. So where did these companies get these aborted babies? Are they part of the, you know, they negotiate with, you know, abortion facilities and they pick them up or?
It's kind of worse than that, though some of that goes on, don't get me wrong. Some companies do, but I mean, the established cell lines that you see, like, for example, in vaccines and all, those cell lines were established by the scientists. Once they were established, they patent them and they sell them. So you can go to online. There's a couple different places that come right off the top of my head. American Type Cell Culture, mm-hmm. ATCC.org. You go there and you can look at their price list and buy their cell lines. You want brain, you want whatever, they sell them. And that's a big money maker.
It's unbelievable.
But that's one company that does that. So once the cell line is established and it's viable and robust and it's being used for something or could be used for something, they'll sell it.
Yeah, good. So did the company knock it off? Did you?
No.
No. Okay.
Sonomics did not. So what Sonomics did is they ignored us, and so we wrote to all of their customers. We went to the big companies. The first one we went was Coca-Cola, Kraft Foods, Campbell's Soup, trying to think of some of the other ones, Soleil, Firmenich. There's just a ton of them. And we wrote to every single one of these companies and told them what was going on. And we said, if we don't hear back from you, we're going to boycott you, all of your, no matter what. Because the problem was we didn't know exactly which products were using, being tested or where they were with all of this. So we just said, we'll just boycott all of your products, everything. So we did lots of press releases on this. And the first thing that happened was, Campbell's Soup and Coca-Cola immediately dropped their contracts with Sonomics. Coca-Cola was furious. We didn't get a lot back from them, but we got feedback back from Campbell. And Campbell said that the relationship they had built with their customers wasn't worth compromising over something like
good.
This, and they dropped them.
Okay, good.
So did Kraft Foods, dropped them. No product ever came to market from any of those companies. The problem was Nestle and Firmenich are two companies that had product on the market already. And not just Firmenich, Ajinomoto was another one that spices. Nestle's coffee creamers and their Maggi soup products. Now, again, there's no aborted babies nor no fetal cells in those products. It's just that the flavors for those products were tested using the aborted fetal cell line by Sonomics.
Okay.
They have to be.
Oh, incredible. This is good stuff, Debbie. And we are so grateful for your time today. So we got to wrap it up. It always goes so quickly, and you have given us such excellent information. I thank you for that. So once again, we've been speaking with Debbie Vintage, Executive Director for Children of God for Life. And Debbie, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and get us educated and up to speed.
Oh, you're so welcome. And, if anybody has questions, they can always email me or go through our website. I'm always glad to help.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, and there's lots of praying that needs to be done, as well as a lot of work that needs to be taken up so that we can educate everyone on this issue. So again, Debbie, thank you for all that you and your organization are doing to help end this culture of death and bring about a culture of life.
Well, once again, we want to encourage our listeners to go to Debbie's website at cogforlife.org. There's a load of documentation and information there so that you can educate yourself on this important topic, as well as in helping to spread the word to others. Well, that's all the time we have for today. We're so glad you could be with us. Until next time, let us heed the warning of St. Maximilian Mary Kolbe that the most deadly poison of our time is indifference. Let's pray for one another that we may be consumed with the desire to save lives and souls, to give the greatest possible honor and glory to God. Ave Maria.
Ave Maria.
Thank you for listening to Pro-Life to the Max, a production of WOMB Catholic Radio. To learn more about this program and how you can help us to continue to produce and broadcast this content, visit us online at WOMBradio.com.